Our lesson is from Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 to 9. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, and when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands, and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. This is the word of the Lord.
Now, can anyone tell me what I spoke about a couple of weeks ago? Oh, Susan, you're not allowed to. Neither are you. Helen? Can anyone tell me? Any ideas? Even a colour?
Yellow.
Yellow. Why yellow? Ha ha. Because yellow is God's. Yellow is light, isn't it? The church is yellow. The church is light. The light to the world. But also shining a light on God. Am I on? Yeah. And this week, I'm going to talk about red. But before I get to that, I need to tell you a story. I need you to meet a family. The Smith family. Now, so you have John. John Smith. I tried to find generic names, okay? So that's why Smith, not because of you guys. We have Heather. We have Tim. Sally. Rover. And the guinea pig, Squeak. John is a hard worker. He works from 9 till 5. He works from 9 till 5, commutes for an hour each way, and he loves his football. Plays football, trains twice a week, plays on the weekends. Oh, give me a sec. That reminds me of a prop I had. Prepared this earlier this week. Nick, do you reckon you can help me? Which one do I need to choose? So, I thought I'd have some fun with it, and it's better that Richmond won because I don't look like I'm looking after myself. So there you go. Richmond. Not happy. That's okay. They played well. They played really well. So John watched the grand final yesterday and his team won. He likes doing a bit of handyman stuff around the house. You know, fixing stuff up, mowing the lawns, whatever. He loves sitting down and just relaxing. When he gets home from work, he likes nothing better than just to sit down and just switch off because he's just worn out. John also grew up in a church and has a really strong faith. Wants to make sure his children get that faith as well. Heather. Heather is a loving, carefree person. She loves life, lives it to the full. John and Heather had a couple of children and, well, as you know, Tim and Sally. And for quite a while, Heather felt like she was an army sergeant major, ordering every minute of the day, making sure the children do what she asked them to do, which quite often didn't happen. After the children went to school, which was at the beginning of this year, Sally started school, Heather started working again 3 days a week between school hours, so she could just drop the kids off at school, pick him up at night. For her recreation time, she loves anything exercise. She loves going for a ride. And I know for some of you, that's exactly what you do for recreation. But she also loves her garden. It is her pride and joy. She loves driving down her street and driving past her garden and thinking it's the best one in the street. Heather has no faith. Never grew up with faith. But there's something about John that she wants her kids to have. That stability, that calmness, that surety of life. She wants her kids to have. Tim. Tim's 8 years old. Is a marvel at school. All his teachers think that he's an angel. His teachers do. His parents know better. He is learning the drums. So when he's home, he drives John and Heather crazy. Practicing. Too noisy. Too much. They should have invested in an electronic set with headphones. He loves superheroes. He loves his dad. He thinks his dad is the ultimate superhero. He can do anything. Tim is 8 still. He will realize soon enough that that's not true. He loves his footy because he looks up to his dad, and Richmond is his team as well. He loves Pirates. He loves everything about Pirates. Anything you can possibly know, he knows about Pirates. He knows how they talk. Actually, it's talked like a pirate though pretty soon, isn't it? Anyway. It's been, has it? Oh well. No, I won't. And he goes along to Sunday school. It's okay. It's pretty interesting stuff. He's still not really sure about this God thing. But Jesus sounds like a pretty cool guy. Sally. She was the perfect child. She did everything as the book said. She did it in perfect timing. Everything went right. Everything they tried worked. Perfect child. She is a bundle of energy. She loves life. She's always skipping and jumping and cartwheeling and whatever else. She's always bouncing. She loves art and craft. She's so good at her art that when she does her artwork, she puts it into little books and makes stories out of them. Not just little stories, but like massive stories. Like the ones she reads and the characters she enjoys reading about. When she goes to school, that's not right. She has just discovered this brand new game, netball. She loves it. She can't get enough. She practices all the time. She can't get enough of it. When she's at Sunday school, it's okay. It's all right. This Jesus guy sounds okay. The reason why Sunday school sounds good is because the stories are a little bit like the stories she makes up in her head. Yeah, they're kind of cool. You know, the good guy always wins in the end. Not always, but the good guy always wins in the end. Some of the stories are a little bit fantastical, a little bit feel unreal. So it's kind of an interesting place to be. That's the Smith family. For me, to a certain extent, I feel like, in a way, that's a pretty typical family. You know, the working, the struggles. And today we're talking about family. I picked a red background because it's red. And I put little hearts because it's about the heart. And what I want to talk to you about today is the family. But what makes family important? What, for me, I guess in a lot of ways, makes family work? How, as parents, whether you're parents of babies or whether you're parents of 40 or 50-year-olds or maybe older, I don't think any of this really matters. I don't think this changes. Or whether you've got grandchildren or great-grandchildren or whether you've just come along, you don't have any children, but you come along and you have these children. We're all family. And out of this passage, there's some things that I think that are really important. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. It's picking up on what we were talking about before. God is the one and only thing we need to be thinking about. This, for the Jewish people, was called the Shema. It was something that some people took it, or if you want to, Shema, or whatever. Shema, anyway, doesn't matter. In my books it said Shema, pronounce it like that. It's one of those things that they would took so importantly, remembering that our God is one. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. Some of them would do it, would say it up to 5 times a day, but it was expected that you would do it at least once. To remind you that our God is the God. There may be other gods in the world that other people believe in, but ours is the God. It is the greatest, it is the best. It is the only one that matters. We need to imagine the end. You know, I was talking a couple of weeks ago about where as a church we need to focus on what's really important. We need to shine our light on God because that's what counts. As a family, it's the same deal. We need to focus our light on God. We need to show our children that the Lord is our God and the Lord is one. He is the one and only, the most important thing ever. Our children need to see that. That it's all about our focus. If we see the end picture of where our children could be, then this is the only way to get them there. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. I reckon I've heard that one somewhere before. Some smart guy said it a little while ago. But it's the core. It's the core of our faith, isn't it? If we just do this stuff, if we just say the Shema, if you want to say that 5 times a day, go for it. If we want to say that just because that's what we do, then it's pointless. It's pointless for us, and it's pointless for our children. Our children watch us every step of the day. They watch what we do. They watch how we react to things. They watch how we relate to things. They watch what we care about, and they echo it, and they mirror it, and they learn from it. Whether I like it or not, some of the things I care about, some of the things I do, mirror my parents. Even some of the things I don't like. We learn from our parents. Our parent, we need to teach our children that we love God. That God is worth loving. That we can have a relationship with Him. That He loves us. And He loves our children. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. Whoops. See, I did this last service and thought I mucked up. Yes. These two kind of roll together. Make it personal. It kind of rolls in because we need to make our children see what we love. But I think also, children need to see their parents make relational, emotional, and spiritual growth a priority. Our children watch us and learn from us. My children learned something about me yesterday afternoon about what priorities I have. You know, Isaac watches the footy all the time. Ellie watches it kind of every now and again. She watched it yesterday. But I watched something yesterday that in the last quarter that I thought I would rather this was different. See, for the first 3 quarters, it was all the umpire's fault. As it always is. It's always the umpire's fault, isn't it? It's never the player's fault and never anyone else's fault, and it's never circumstances or one team playing better. It's always the umpire's. Up until that point, you didn't want to see me, okay? But my children did. And so about halfway through the last quarter, I'm watching Isaac and Ellie getting angry about a stupid football game. And so Vicky and I actually made a choice at that point. It's a very object lesson for me since I'm doing this. At that point, Vicky and I have decided we knew that it's just a game. Yes, it's a grand final, it's a big game, and it would have been great if they had won, but it's just a game. So we spent a lot of that last quarter, and it was easier to calm down because the game was over by then anyway. We spent a lot of that time talking to Ellie and Isaac and just saying, it's just a game. It doesn't matter. There are other things that are way more important. They needed to see us deal with the disappointment of our team losing a grand final. They needed to see how we coped with that. They needed to see how we deal with all sorts of situations in our life. And we all deal with them. Sometimes we deal with them exceptionally well. Sometimes we deal with them exceptionally badly. And our children learn. They learn from how we deal with them what is important. What we need to do is, within reason, include them on our journey. Help them to understand what's going on for us. Help them to understand how to think about this stuff in a different way. I'm not saying talk to a 5-year-old about stuff that you should only be talking to 17-year-olds about, but you understand what I mean. This next one. This is really important. You shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontless. I shouldn't have copied that passage, but anyway. Between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Do you see something in this? This is talking about the rhythm of life. This is talking about when you sit, when you walk, when you lie down, and when you rise. Everything you do, this should ooze out of you. Your faith, your life, what God is to you should ooze out of you every step of the way. Your children should see that when you sit, when you lie down, when you're walking along the road. It should be a part of your conversation. Now, I'm a realist too, and I know that doesn't happen that way. But there are some things that are important about being a parent in this. And that is creating a rhythm. You know, you're told in all the good parenting books, create a rhythm. The sooner you start a rhythm with your children, the better off you are. They'll sleep when you want them to. They'll wake up when you want them to. They'll eat when you want them to. And everything will be perfect. I'm glad I got a laugh. And that's what they say, isn't it? You get it right and it'll be perfect. It's not real. But there is something important about that, the rhythm stuff. You look at children that don't have a rhythm in their life and they're lost. They do all sorts of silly things when they don't have clear boundaries and a clear rhythm to their life. They are lost. So here's a rhythm we can do. When you're sitting, when do you sit down with your family? Evening meal. You read my notes, didn't you? At mealtime. It's a perfect opportunity to sit down and talk to your children about the day. Unpack the day with them. Find out what's going on. Talk to them. Find ways of including where God was in their day. We do what was your best thing and what was your worst thing. This is an opportunity for you to teach your children about God. This is an opportunity for you to teach your children about where God is in their life. Help them to see. When you walk, well, we don't walk so much anymore. Some people walk a lot. But I also found something interesting, that walking is one of the best times for talking to someone. You know, Vicky found last Facebook, Vicky showed me this thing about this walking psychologist. A person who their practice is about, this psychological practice is about walking. Through a park, I think it's through a park, but I've always found the best times of talking to someone about stuff is walking through a park or down the beach or round an oval or whatever. Something special about walking and talking. For I guess, modern families, it would be driving. You've got a captive audience. They can't get away without killing themselves or doing serious damage. You've got a captive audience there. You guys are going to love this, aren't you? Just to have a chat about stuff, informal dialogue. It's your opportunity to be a mentor and a friend. Like I said, this is a good outline, this is a good rhythm. It doesn't mean it's always going to work. When you lie down, there is a time when I try not to be available. I do not answer my phone. We do not answer our phone at mealtime. So do not ring us, because it would, well, unless you want to leave a message. We do not answer our phone at mealtime to anyone unless we know an important call is coming. Another really important time for me is bedtime. Because it's a time of day when I can just sit and be with my children. I can just unpack the day a bit. Help them to see where God is at. A little bit like the mealtime, except it's more focused. It's a more intimate conversation. It's special. So between 5:30 and 7, my day is a write-off. Except for CHY nights. But generally speaking, I'm not available in that time because my children are that important. And your children should be too, even if they're 20. And your job then is to be a counselor. To help them work through this stuff. The perfect opportunity for that. Rising, getting up in the day, start the day fresh. Here you start very early. I've noticed Queensland start very early. Maybe it's because the sun gets up so early, I don't know, but it's really early. It's a chance to help your children to see that they can start again. What happened yesterday, it's over, it's done with. This is a new day, a new start. It's getting ready for the day ahead. If you had a bad day with them the day before, it's a chance to start again. But it's also a chance to, when you know what's going on in their life that day, to say, I know you've got a concert today. I know you've got a talk today. You're going to be great to be a coach, to build them up, to encourage them, to help them to be the best they possibly can be. Like I said, these things will help. I have put them in. Well, we've tried as much as we possibly can to use this stuff in our life. As I said, this came out of a book, Think Orange, which I read about 5 years ago. And some of this stuff we already knew, but I found it so important that I have to share it. The last thing that comes out of this is actually the first thing that's said. Hear, O Israel. Hear, O Israel. See, Moses isn't addressing individuals. He's not even addressing families so much. He is addressing a nation. You know the whole old saying, takes a village to raise a child? In today's society, we have become so self-sufficient and we can do it all ourselves. And there's this expectation that we do. If we're struggling with anything, then we're not strong enough. What do they say about Christians? You've got a crutch. It's your crutch, as if that's a bad thing. You know, for me, that's a proud thing. I need a crutch. I do. At least I've got one. Most other people limp through life trying without anything. Because I'm strong and I can do it all myself. And as parents, we do the same thing. We expect that we should be able to have it all together. After all, we're the adults. Our children need to learn from us. We've got to have it all together. But you don't. That's why we have a church. That's why we have a community. We as a church, our responsibility, whether we are parents of young children or not, whether we're older people or not, we have a responsibility to work together for the good of these guys. So that all of these guys can know God. It doesn't just rely on the parents, as important as their role is. The church's role is to support the parents, to support the children, to care. Maybe even to do all of that stuff I talked about before. We as a church can do that. We might not be able to be there when the children are going to bed. We might not be able to be there at the evening meal, but we can still be there with them. We can still walk with them. We can still talk with them. We can still care for them. We have so many opportunities to do that. In a few weeks, I'm going to do an information session. The reason why I haven't organised it yet is because I'm tossing up whether it's better to do it on a Sunday afternoon or a weeknight. I don't know what's better for anyone. So afterwards, let me know. I want to do this information session for anyone who is even remotely interested in children. I'm not going to do this information session to rope you in to say, oh, great, you're interested in children. Let's get you into KOS or CHY. No. What I want to do is talk to you about what KOS, YOS, CHY, playgroup, all of that stuff is doing. So we can work together and get excited about our children's ministries and our youth ministries so that we can find ways of supporting each other. Yes, I would love for everyone in this church to be involved in this because we should all be involved as a community. But that doesn't mean you rock up and help out at KOS, YOS, CHY and playgroup. It might mean that you pray. It might mean that you put together a craft for playgroup or KOS. It might mean that you do something else. It might mean that you just make sure you ask the people that are doing it how they're going. It might mean that you talk to the parents or the children. Fancy that, talking to children. And just listening to how they're going. When you say, how are you going? And they say, okay. Say, well, no, actually, I want to know how you're really going. And be prepared for what may come. We are a community. We are Israel. We shouldn't need all these reminders, but we do. So we have that Deuteronomy 6 passage to continue to remind us that's exactly what it was for. To remind the people of Israel where they came from and how great their God is. We need to remember where we've come from and how great our God is so that our children can remember where they come from and how great their God is. Will you please pray with me? Thank you for all you do. I want to thank you for the way you work in our lives, for the things you've done for us, for the way you've changed us. I want to thank you for this community that we are a part of here at Chapel Hill. I just ask that you do something amazing in it. We've got all these children and all these families here. Help them all to feel together and resourced and supported by you so that these children can grow up to know you. So they're not just another stat. Lord, help us as a community to come together, to care for each other, to love each other. Help each one of these parents to be the best parents they possibly can be. Helping their children to grow, to love you. Help them to be great examples for their children so that when their children look to them, they see that you are the most important thing in the world. And I thank you for this. Amen. Interesting stat to leave you parents with, if the musicians could please come up. Was a little while ago, Vicky and I went to an information thing at Investigator College, just before we came up here. It was by a psychologist, a local psychologist, who was talking about helping your children deal with anxiety and all that sort of stuff. And I thought it was interesting because I was a chaplain. And but there was one thing that she said, and she said all this stuff that we need to do. But she said, do you know what percentage you need to get right as a parent for your child to grow up okay, to grow up well, and not too unbalanced? And I've got in my head, I asked Vicky and she couldn't remember, unfortunately, but I've got in my head 60%. All this stuff sounds like you've got to have it all perfect, but you don't. You can make mistakes. It's okay. Sorry, I needed to make sure that was in there and I left it out halfway through. So, shouldn't have an addendum, but that's okay.